Hey, this is Wayne Cook, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for West Coast Bias, the show brought to you all the way from the best coast. It's the West Coast Bias, that is. Aw, yeah.
Welcome to another episode of West Coast Bias. Yes, it's another solo show. That's just kind of what it'll be for a while until I make an appearance back in Los Angeles and get together with Jake and we can discuss all things West Coast sports, which is for us mostly Lakers, Dodgers. The West Coast Bias is part of the What's Brewing Network, along with other great shows such as the What's Brewing Symposium, where the guys talk about UCLA sports. And, of course, there's the Bare Minimum, where Jake and his daughter Megan discuss my alma mater and Megan's experience at the University of California, Berkeley. Go Bears! Let's start off with some Arizona musings. Yes, of course, I moved here 7 months ago to Tucson, Arizona, Southern Arizona. This year, my kids had spring break. And for those who are in the know that love sports, know that the Dodgers do their spring training here in Arizona. And so I took the kids up to the Phoenix area so they can see their first spring training experience, Dodger spring training. it's kind of cool to be so close. Normally I make a trip out of it. The guy who was the best man at my wedding, we do this spring training trip. We see some Dodger games, you know, we go to like Scottsdale and eat at different places. It's pretty fun. You know, he golfs. I just watch because I'm not much of a golfer. It's a great experience for anybody. You know, you're really close to the action. And the Dodgers, even though they have a 13,000 seat stadium, no matter where you sit, you're really close to the action. And there's a bunch of teams in the Phoenix area. So it's a good experience if you want to be up close to the action. You'll never get this close to major leaguers again. Decent prices. But this year, the Dodgers tickets were so in demand, and of course that probably has to do with some of the guys brought in, mainly Ohtani. It was $80 to sit in the cheapest seats for spring training. And I thought to myself, there's no way in hell. I don't even want to spend $80 on a regular season Dodger ticket. Why would I want to spend $80 to sit in a cheaper part of a small stadium for an exhibition game? I just couldn't do it. Sorry. So what we did is, and this is a great part about being in Arizona for spring training, is that teams are all over the greater Phoenix area. There's teams in Chandler, Mesa, Goodyear, Tempe. The Angels are in Tempe, Scottsdale. That's where the Cubs are. No, actually, they might be in Tempe as well, but the Giants are in Scottsdale. There we go. Giants and the now Sacramento Athletics. More on that. We decided to watch the Dodgers. It's spring training. They went and played Cleveland in Goodyear. $29. A little bit more reasonable. Again, great seats. And it was just fun. It was a fun experience. My kids aren't as huge of fans as I am, but they enjoyed it. We got an Airbnb. There was a pool. It was a great experience. Their first spring training here in Arizona. First spring training, first spring break. So that's Arizona musings on this episode. Let's move on to where we're at in the LA sports scene. Last night, thanks to the powers of T-Mobile and their free MLB TV deal, I'm now able to watch Dodger games for free. Well, I pay T-Mobile every month for my phone, but I got the MLB TV for free. I have NBA TV as well, and then ESPN Plus to be able to watch the Kings. NBA TV, obviously, to watch the Lakers. So last night, I watched the Lakers win their game. They're now won six of their last seven games. They're pretty firmly entrenched in the play-in, but not too far out. In fact, I think they're only three games out of the sixth seed in the Western Conference. Watched the Kings win. They beat the Seattle Kraken, eliminated them from playoff contention, and solidified themselves as probably a wild card team the last team to qualify for the postseason. But as we all know in hockey, if you qualify for the postseason, there's a chance you could even win the Stanley Cup. We'll see. And, of course, saw the Dodgers. The Dodgers finish off a sweep of the San Francisco Giants to finish their homestand. So with those three wins, I think we'll call this week's episode I've Seen Enough. Yeah, I've seen enough. The Lakers won't miss the postseason, as some thought at times during the season, especially after they won the play-in tournament or whatever that the in-season tournament was called before. I know they changed the name, but it really doesn't matter. You know, they look like one of the hottest teams. They win this brand new tournament, and then everything sort of just the bottom fell out. Injury to LeBron James, lackluster play, Darvinham not being able to figure out his rotation, maybe paying Torian Prince too much. They lose Gabe Vincent, who was supposed to be one of their big free agent signings, you know, to solidify their depth. They've lost Jared Vanderbilt for the season. A lot of things just kept happening. You know, the whole will they trade or won't they trade distraction of D'Angelo Russell. Well, somehow I've gotten Gabe Vincent back after missing months. D'Angelo Russell has played like an all-star, frankly, in terms, at least on the offensive end, and then just set a new record for most threes made in a season by a Laker. LeBron came back, scored his 40,000th point. He looks like he's going to be on the NBA NBA All-League team this year. At least most voters and most bloggers I've read say he's going to at least make second team, which is just astounding. His 21st season, you know, 38 going into 39 year on the planet, doing things that he shouldn't really be doing as a basketball player. And all these, and Anthony Davis staying healthy, to me, should be Defensive Player of the Year for all that he has to do for the Lakers on the defensive end. It's a no-brainer to me that he should be Defensive Player of the Year. We'll see if that even happens. You know, these writers, they don't give him as much credit. But still, monster season. He'll definitely be All-NBA along with LeBron. And they've played really well. They actually won more games than they did last year. Yet they're still in a play-in situation. But again, I'll say, I've seen enough. The Houston Rockets were literally rocketing and looked like they were going to catch the Warriors to get that 10th spot, because right now the Lakers are doing a good job of staying in that 9th spot. So at least they would host a play-in game before having to, if they win, try to get into the postseason by beating the loser of the 7-8 game. But, like I said, I've seen enough. They won't miss the postseason. They'll win more games than last year, but yet still be in a play-in situation unless they really go supernova, win the rest of their games. I think there's only 8 games left. Win the rest of the games of the season and are able to... actually, no, there isn't 8 games win. There's only 7 games. Go if they went 6-1, they would need, like, the Suns and the Kings to falter, maybe go... 4-3 each in order to bounce and get into that 6 seed. But we'll see. But again, that my point being, I've seen enough. The Lakers will make the postseason. And that wasn't a guaranteed thing 2 months ago, or certainly around Thanksgiving when they seemed to really struggle. And there was a good chance that D'Angelo Russell was going to need to be traded for some important piece to help LeBron and Anthony Davis. Continue with I've Seen Enough edition. Let's go to the Kings. I think the Kings will certainly make the postseason. They had some struggles on a road trip recently. I think they only got 1 point out of 3 games. They're having a tough time leapfrogging into the third place in their division, which means they would play the second place team in their division. So it's looking more and more like they're going to be a wild card team. But they're 5 points up on the closest team. They won last night, like I said, 5-2, limited Seattle Kraken. I've seen enough. I think a 5-point cushion is enough for them to get into the postseason. Now, as it stands right now, they'll play the Dallas Stars, who are one of the fastest. They're fastest teams in the NHL. They're a young team. They score a lot of goals. I think it'd be a minor miracle if the Kings got past them. But again, in the NHL postseason, all you need is your goalie to stand on their head in order to make some waves and potentially get to a Stanley Cup final. Last year, the Florida Panthers were the wild card for the entire league, worst point total for the entire playoff seeding, and they upset the record-breaking Bruins and went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. But yes, they lost in the final, but like I said, they were able to go all the way, and that's something that, frankly, in the NHL, if you get hot for 2 months, you can find yourself, contending for a title, despite everything that happened in the regular season. I'd like to highlight Anze Kopitar, who I think is in his 16th season. He's the team captain for the Kings. He looks like he's going to lead the team in points again. The only times he hasn't led the team in points is when he's been injured. It's just a testament to his work ethic. Will definitely be a Hall of Famer and likely have his number raised to the rafters like Dustin Brown did last year. Not East Coast, but one more hockey news. Jonathan Quick, former Kings goalie, stalwart now with the Rangers, helping them potentially get the best record in the NHL as a backup goalie. He won his record for American goalies, passing former Anaheim Ducks goalie Ryan Miller. Almost a guarantee that Jonathan Quick, with all his other accolades, winning championships with the LA Kings, he'll get into the Hall of Fame. And in my opinion, guaranteeing that his number 32 will be raised to the rafters at Staples Center, joining Magic Johnson, Lakers 32, and Sandy Koufax has his number 32 raised at Dodger Stadium. So a real iconic number, the number 32 in LA sports. So congratulations to Jonathan Quick. Hopefully one day we'll see his number raised to the rafters and for all the things he did for the LA Kings. Okay, so moving on. So this is going to be the majority of what I'm going to talk about for sure is the Dodgers. So I mentioned spring training. We were lucky that we got to see the Dodgers because the same week that the kids were on spring break was the last of their spring training in America, or at least at their spring training facility in Arizona, because for what some strange reason this year, and I think I've mentioned that on the podcast already, the season was going to open in South Korea, in Seoul, against the San Diego Padres, two games. It's before they played them, they had some exhibition games, and then they're going to play two games to start the season in South Korea, come back to the States, play the freeway series, and it wasn't going to count against the Angels, and then start the season again in America, this time at home, in late March. Very strange way. I know why MLB is doing it. It's a money grab. It's exposure. The game is popular in South Korea, baseball that is, but obviously with Shohei Ohtani being on the Dodgers, it would be dumb not to showcase the team like that internationally. Next year, it's already been confirmed that Dodgers are actually going to start their season in Japan. Again, no-brainer, money grab, but yeah, we know why they're doing it. So anyway, so the Dodgers start their season 1-1. Tyler Glasnow got the opening day start. The Dodgers' other big free agent signing, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, got the second start. He looked terrible. The Dodgers won their first game, I think it was like 7-1. And then Yamamoto couldn't get out of the first inning. It looked terrible. But the Dodgers still almost came back. They ended up losing that game 15-11. And you can see a theme here. So, of course, they come back. They start the season strong. They've started the season really strong. 9 consecutive games in which they've scored at least 9 runs. They've tied a record. This goes back to the 1800s with the old Brooklyn Grays, I believe, was the team. But yes, they've tied a record. Certainly the longest streak to start since they've been in Los Angeles. I think the modern streak was only 5 games, Brooklyn Dodgers back in the 50s. So my point is the offense, despite sometimes not looking good, a lot of strikeouts, they seem to always find a spark. And of course, the catalyst of that is Mookie Betts. I mean, I could rattle off all his numbers. It doesn't make for a good podcast, essentially. And I'm not kidding, folks. He leads the major leagues in almost any offensive category you can think of. The only one I know for sure, he only has one stolen base, which ties him for like 160-something. But other than that, he is on a torrid pace. He's hitting 484. He was hitting 500, but he only got one hit yesterday. he leads the team in home runs. He started the season by hitting home runs in four straight games. You know, he leads the team in slugging, OPS, on-base percentage, thanks to a ton of walks. So basically, he's just on a hot streak. And despite the fact that Ohtani hasn't started it off hot, he's still contributed. Last night, he hit his first home run for the Los Angeles Dodgers at home, which was pretty amazing to watch. And it ended up being the margin of victory for them. They won 5-4 to sweep the Giants, like I told you. It seemingly, and again, this goes back to I've seen enough, the theme of the show. Yeah, the Dodgers are going to make the postseason. There's no way this team can't win 88 games. The starters for the season, the starting pitching for the season, they start off with like a 2.74 ERA for the homestand that they had, because they started with the Cardinals four games. They won three out of four games there. Could have won the fifth game. I mean, sorry, they could have won the one that they lost that went into extra innings, but you know, then they end up sweeping the Giants. I mean, it's just crazy. This team, 1-4, is going to be really hard, you know, with Mookie, Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, who, again, leads the team in doubles, as he led all of Major League Baseball in doubles last year. And then Will Smith, who's started off great after extending his contract for 10 years at $140 million, which is a bargain, in my opinion. I mean, it's pretty crazy how hard it is for Major League Baseball pitchers to get through the Dodgers lineup. And then every once in a while, they're getting contributions from guys like Teoscar Hernandez, who's hit, I think he's second on the team with home runs, which nobody was expecting, right behind Mookie. And then Miguel Rojas, who's looking to be a spot starter at shortstop, hit his second home run already of the season. I think he only had like two last year, and he's already hit two this season. I mean, there's contributions from everybody so far in the lineup. So, yeah, I've seen enough. This team is going to make it the postseason. They're definitely going to win 88 games. I'm not saying that the regular season doesn't matter, because, like I said, can Mookie win an MVP with the way he started, if he can consistently do this for the whole rest of the season? Will Ohtani win the MVP if he really starts to get going? You know, what's the pitching going to look like, especially when guys like Walker Buehler come back as he rehabs in AAA? Or, you know, when Clayton Kershaw comes back after having shoulder surgery in the offseason. There's a lot of variables that can make the season seem dynamic. People will be stat watching, wondering if this is the best team in Major League Baseball, let alone Dodger history or Major League history. You know, we don't know. They've won 110 games a couple years ago, and it didn't matter. They won 100 last year despite nobody picking them to be that good, and it didn't matter, because ultimately what everybody wants to know is how this team is going to fare in October. Shohei Ohtani has never played a single October game. Well, I shouldn't say that. He's played October regular season games, but he's never played an October postseason game. And for what they signed him for, there is that heavy expectation that maybe he will get this version of the Dodgers over the hump, the Freddie Freeman, the Mookie Betts leadership version over the hump, and get them into a World Series, at least get them into a World Series, if not help them win one in his first season with the team. Same thing, can Yamamoto adapt after struggling in that first game terribly, not being able to get out of the first inning? He pitched well, five innings, shut out ball in the game that ended up going into extra innings, so no decision for him. But obviously, they need more of that version versus the version that started the season in the second game. Will Tyler Glass now be able to stay healthy? He's never pitched more than 140 innings in a season. A lot of questions for sure all season, like I said, and what happens when guys come back. But in reality, this team, it's all about what happens in October, and they'll be there. They're going to win more than 88 games for sure. That's always my sort of cutoff in this new system, but it matters what happens once they get there and how they'll do. Now, I wasn't sure if I wanted it. It's been a week now. This story goes back to almost 2 weeks now. This story goes back to when the Dodgers were in South Korea. And just a quick rundown, apparently Shohei Ohtani's friend and interpreter, who's been with him since his Angel days, Ipe, ended up confessing to betting royally with an offshore bookie, you know, basically not Vegas, but somebody you give money, in debt for a lot of money, and conflicting stories of whether he had Ohtani pay off his debts, which accumulated $4.5 million, or he had access to Ohtani's accounts and paid them off using Ohtani's funds. So that was a story. That was a contradiction. As soon as the Dodgers got back to the United States, Ohtani addressed this, and he said that he wasn't aware of these gambling debts. He never transferred any money, and that federal investigators are looking into his former interpreter Ipe's dealings, and Major League Baseball is also looking into it. Putting a huge cloud over the beginning of the season, I think some folks are speculating whether Ohtani only hitting 270 to start the season and kind of looking to start off slow before, at least before last night when he got two hits, the home run and scored two runs, was a distraction. And then frankly, I didn't know what to think, but after the press conference, the only thing I can think of is, and I could be wrong on this, right? Any statement that Ohtani would have made would have, if there is a federal investigation ongoing, is evidentiary, right? He went in front of cameras and said, I didn't have anything to do with this. I never authorized any of my funds going to paying off of bookie's debts. This was money stolen, basically. And so I think of it less of a he said, she said kind of situation and more of like, why would you put yourself in that kind of situation where you're making these kind of statements that can one day be used against you? I don't know. I could be wrong on the law, but it doesn't make any sense. Also, after the press conference, the interpreter, Ipe, he didn't come out and make his own statements or contradict what Ohtani said. So I have a feeling that it's not the last we'll hear about it. It's not really, to me, important. Major League Baseball didn't necessarily clear him, but said that they're not investigating him individually, but they're investigating the situation. So, and they're allowing him to play while the investigation is going on. So I don't know that it's cut and dry. But what I will say is I found strange is one of the narratives that kept being put out there is how he could put himself in this kind of situation. And it's as if everybody took stupid juice. Major League Baseball professional sports players have been wronged and robbed by members of their family, their closest friends, associates, people that they've put in charge of the money a lot. This goes back to the days when professional boxers were robbed blind by their promoters. I mean, it just happens. I mean, you hear these stories all the time. People are incredulous that somebody like Ohtani, who seems so hyper-focused on his career, could do that. And frankly, we don't know who the guy is. I mean, he got married 2 seconds after, or right before he was supposed to leave for South Korea. No, I'm sorry. He announced that he got married. Nobody knew that he was actually seeing anyone. Certainly not anybody who had followed his career as a reporter when he was with the Angels. And then his wife doesn't turn up until a few weeks later when it's time to go to South Korea. And basically it's introduced as this woman who plays professional basketball in Japan. You know, it's just, there's a lot of strangeness surrounding this beginning of the season for Ohtani, including last night he hits a home run It's his first home run as a Dodger. The camera shows somebody catching it, and then the story comes out that the person was willingly exchanged the home run ball for some memorabilia and a chance to meet Ohtani. And then today, the story comes out that the Dodgers coerced the person, threatened not to authenticate the ball, making it in this statement meaningless. It's just, you know, there's speculation about whether Ohtani actually met the person or not, whether he said he did or not. I mean, there's just so much distraction that I almost want it to be October already so we can just see them in the postseason, because this is the way it's going to be. It's becoming a reality that this is the most scrutinized, most watched athlete in the world at the moment. And he just, it's kind of surreal and weird. Especially when it comes to LA sports, how much what he says, what he does, these circumstances are all of a sudden popping up that was not what most Dodger fans bargained for. I'm sure they were just concerned about him hitting home runs, stealing bases, or, you know, hitting triples and leading this team to a World Series win. And I will say this, you know, it's like, it's funny, the whole scandal with interpreter Ipe, it's like, I don't know how of course, everybody wants to dump on the Dodgers. Everybody hates the Dodgers. People who didn't sign Ohtani, you could tell. And there's people who are fans of the teams that didn't sign Ohtani immediately went to social media and were like, this is the worst scandal that's ever happened, you know, ignoring a bunch of other things that have happened in baseball. You know, what's the difference between this and Pete Rose? It's just absurd stories, pulling them out of their ass because Ohtani didn't sign with their team, and so they're pissed, quite blatantly, especially Giants fans, who don't know nuance anyway to begin with. But that being said, it's funny that nobody mentioned the fact that if this is real, Ohtani has some gambling addiction, him and Ipe were partners in this kind of crime. It's like, well, this all happened on the Angels' watch. Why is nobody scrutinizing the fact that the Angels, this is an Angels employee? And by the way, his credibility was thrown out the door almost immediately, and people can speculate, well, that's Ohtani's team saying these things. But apparently Ipe had said that he had worked for the Red Sox and the Yankees. That never happened. As a translator, that never happened. He said he went to UC Riverside, and the Angels confirmed that they weren't able to confirm that he ever went to UC Riverside, let alone graduated. So obviously this person had been lying from day one, and it's a pattern, apparently. But all this happened on the Angels' watch. They're the ones who signed Ohtani when he came over. They're the ones who've been around him the most and, coddled him, you know, allowed him to, you know, kind of live in a different plane than the rest of the team. And yet one of their employees is the one, or former employees is the one that got him, in this scandal. So I don't understand why it automatically became a Dodger thing, especially since the first minute they heard of it, they were like, you need to fire this guy. And Ohtani was like, okay, they were like, we need to fire this guy, because they hired him for Ohtani, which every team does something like that. I remember when Shaq signed with the Lakers, they had his bodyguards on their payroll because Shaq wanted to continue to have his entourage roll with him, and the Lakers obliged because, you know, much like in marriage, happy wife, happy life. Well, in sports, it's happy free agent, superstar signing, happy team, you know? So it's just, it's kind of funny in this day and age with social media, these stories that come out, just the weird scrutinies. Just like today, you know, again, Athletic writer, Angels Athletic beat writer, or former, I guess, because I guess he's writing on the Dodgers beat now, getting the story about whether or not Ohtani agreed to meet with anybody, whether the Dodgers coerced somebody to give up a home run ball. I mean, of course it happened on a Dodger day off. They went to Chicago to play the Cubs. You know, just people trying to find something to say about this situation. And I'm afraid this is the way it's going to be all season, because the story will be Ohtani, Ohtani, Ohtani. Whatever happens with him is going to be the story. And there's going to be a good angle, there's going to be a bad angle, there's going to be a what the heck is going on angle until October. And then all anybody will write about then is Ohtani's first postseason. Will he come through? And, oh God, I hope he sure does, because I don't want to read about, you know, the million-dollar bust, $700 million bust that Ohtani is for a whole offseason. So, again, the theme was, I've seen enough, but we've ventured into, you know, what the Ohtani mania, which is much different than the goodwill that was the Fernando mania from 40 years ago. Anyway, so that's enough on the Dodgers. I think, you know, as the season goes by, I'll continue to discuss the cool things that happen, like last night's home run, and just how the season is going to go. And of course, like I mentioned, we've got Lakers playoff basketball. I'm not even talking about the Clippers. The Clippers are easily entrenched in the I think in the fourth spot. That means they would host the opening round playoff series. But they've struggled lately. They were at one point fighting for a number one seed. I think they're too far out of that, but you never know what can happen in these few games. But the thing that's reared its ugly head in the past is first Paul George was hurt and the team struggled. Now Kawhi Leonard's missed a couple of games. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. The Clippers were making noise. There was a real chance that they could have taken the number one seed, but I don't think that'll happen. But yet, they'll still have some advantage in the postseason. So that means Staples Center, in its last year with all three tenants, will again have to figure out how to host three postseason series at around the same time, with the Kings being in the postseason and the Lakers and the Clippers both with a chance to have a postseason series. Of course, if the Lakers miss out because of the play-in, losing in the play-in series, then it'll be different. But again, who knows? The end of this month. And, oh yeah, that's another thing I want to talk about. This is just the best month to be a sports fan. It's either this or October. It's generally, and it's pretty amazing that April and October are 6 months apart, but that's really where there's sort of this weird equinox of sports where everything seems to be going on at once. Like I mentioned, last night I watched the Dodgers, the Lakers, and the Kings all win within a couple hours of each other. It's great. You got Major League Baseball starting, March Madness going on, both men and women. Sorry, UCLA women who couldn't get out of the Sweet 16. Sorry, USC women who couldn't make it to the Final Four. But both had good seasons. Hopefully, they'll continue to have success and next year. You know, be close in the standings again, like they were, and fight tooth and nail, not only to be the best team now in the Big Ten for next year, but in Los Angeles. But yeah, March Madness is going on, the Final Four this coming Monday for the men, and then of course the women right after. You got, I mentioned hockey playoffs are going to start this month. You're going to have, at the end of the month, you're going to have the NFL draft. It'll be interesting to see what the Chargers do under Jim Harbaugh. For the first time, as they're drafting with him as their coach, we'll see what the Rams can pull off as they try to get back to being a perennial success in the NFL. But there's all these things that just come together all at once in March, and it's really great. A lot of it's the beginning, some of it's the endings of the regular seasons, of, you know, and things like that. But it's all very fun and great to be able to experience and watch. It's one of my favorite times of the year. The sun is out. It's a nice 80-degree weather here before it becomes 113 again here in Arizona. But just a lot of things that revolve around sports. And, of course, West Coast Bias will be there to talk to you guys about what's going on in the LA sports scene as things start to heat up. So listen out. I'm going to try. I've become sort of a monthly thing now. I'm going to try to do maybe every 2 weeks because, you know, it's not that hard to find things to talk about, but I honestly feel like you guys shouldn't just have to hear my voice the whole time. It's always better when there's a double dynamic, especially Jake and I. as he brings things up. I know he has a good idea about some things with the Lakers, just kind of the way things have gone in the, I guess, post-Magic Pelinka era, building a championship team and then sort of watching it crumble and trying to get back to relevancy and try to squeeze as much out of this partnership between LeBron and AD, which is amazingly going on 5 seasons, and LeBron 6 seasons as a Laker, actually longer than he ever was with the Heat or his second stint with the Cavaliers. So he's got a pretty good idea, Jake does, in arguing some of the pros and cons and just what the Lakers should do as this LeBron era ends. And we'll see what they do with, whether it becomes AD's team. But I'll let him discuss that with you guys. Of course, West Coast Bias is part of the What's Brewing Network. Again, you can catch the guys, Jake, Mike, and occasionally Bill talking about UCLA sports, which has got to heat up soon because we're already talking about a transition to the Big Ten. After baseball season, that's it. College baseball, I should say, that's it. There's no more sports being played. I believe the transition is official in July. And the same here. Arizona will be heading to the Big 12. Cal, my alma mater, will be going to the ACC. So it's really, the sands of time are slipping away for what was the Pac-12, before that Pac-10, Pac-8. Pacific Coast Conference is just a great tradition that sadly is going to go away very, very soon. So I'm sure the guys will talk about that. And Jake's daughter's going to be finishing another year at Cal. And I'm sure he's going to have a lot of fun stuff to talk about Megan as she starts to, I can't believe she's going to be a junior in the fall. I remember when she was applying to schools. Congratulations, Jake. And Sarah, your wife, on all the things that Megan is doing. And my understanding is their other daughter's going to be going to college too. I won't say what her choice is, but, congratulations. Again, to my good friend, co-host and producer. So, he's probably going to get mad at me for going on so long, and for him having to edit out all my ums and eh. But, So listen for West Coast Bias as the baseball season starts to roll and as we figure out whether AD and LeBron can pull something off here as we transition from April into the summer and NBA playoffs. And we'll see if maybe Mike and I have something to talk about, if the Kings can really start to get rolling and get the kind of play that was expected, or at least everyone saw at the beginning of the season, if it can roll into hockey's playoffs that extends into the summer. But enough for me, and as we say here on West Coast Bias, we're the West Coast, we're the best coast, we're West Coast Bias.
West Coast Bias.
Dude, Rob, we play some ball on the West Coast.